This is the big idea that we've been talking about together in the form of a series, and that is that God has created us with a heart that is astonished and delighted in the things that he has created. That he has created us with five senses, and our five senses take in the things that God has created as a sign or in order to delight in the one who has created them. So he has given things that he has created to inspire us to adore, cherish, and treasure and delight in the one who has created them, the Father. But because we are human, because we have fallen, and because of what sin does, we find ourselves ensnared and adoring and delighting primarily in the things that God has created rather than using them as a sign to adore and love the one who created them himself. So we turn good things into God things. We make things that he has given us to remind us of himself into the ultimate things, and then they collapse under the weight of our expectations that they ought to fulfill us. And these are things that God has created to inspire us to adore the giver, not to become addicted to the gift. So here's the big idea today. As we finish this one last message in our series today, here's the big idea. God has created humans to be fully and finally satisfied by heaven alone. So that's the big idea, that we've been created with a nature or a capacity to be fully and finally satisfied, but it will ultimately be done so in heaven. So there are the cravings that a pregnant woman has are legendary, aren't they? I mean, how many of you have come across these, the idea that women who are pregnant have these absolutely overwhelming cravings that are unique to pregnancy? And I gotta be honest, I was started to read through on the internet, which is the source of all authority and truth, by the way. You can find anything you wanna know forever on the internet. Here's what pregnant women, apparently, this is what they crave, in the order in which they crave them. The top five that I could find on the internet, they crave chocolate. Come on, ladies, does it really take pregnancy to crave chocolate? I mean, this is... Secondly, pickles, cheese, bacon, and ice cream. And you know, I got to thinking after reading this list, I better go see a doctor, because I think there's a good possibility. I mean, am I the only one who's like, wait, this is just for pregnant women? But evidently, what they say is pregnant women have these insatiable appetites and cravings for these particular items and find themselves in the middle of the night looking, searching for a source of bacon, chocolate-covered bacon to dip in their ice cream. It's obvious when our pregnant women have these cravings. It is so clear and so blatant and so obvious. Evidently, they say that it's overwhelming. For the rest of us, the cravings that drive us are more subtle. For the rest of us who don't have pregnancy cravings, for those of us who have somehow find ourselves single and we're craving a spouse, or we have been recently married and we crave a family, or we crave being home or having a home, there are some of us who crave freedom and gratification or love and respect and acceptance or comfort or significance, or you name it, whatever the craving is, those tend to drive our lives in far more subtle ways than pregnancy cravings. We don't necessarily detect them. We aren't necessarily aware of them. But those cravings exist, and here's what they do. They reveal a particular specific capacity that God has made each one of us, in a way that God has made each one of us, for awe or for delight. Let me make sure that I define what awe means just so that you can follow me here. Awe specifically means when our hearts are astonished or delighted. It is when our hearts are filled with gratification or delight or astonishment. God has made us with the capacity for awe. And in fact, it is our cravings that reveal that we have a capacity to be astonished, delighted, or gratified. One day, we will be fully complete and will never hunger again. If you believe in Jesus and you belong to God because of that, then one day you, of course, know that we have a hope for heaven. But today, we find our hearts restless, we find ourselves craving, we find our minds oftentimes are racing, and what we're racing for in our mind and what we're restless for in our heart is some kind of longing that we have for completion or fulfillment. And how can we be sure that God has created humans? How can we be positive that God has created humans with the capacity for awe? Here's how I think we can tell. Listen to this. What if we are sure that God has created us this way because human beings are perpetually unsatisfied and always longing for more? Awe in our hearts simply means that we are longing for completion or for satisfaction. Everyone has the quest, or everyone exists with this quest for soul satisfaction. And this is why it's dangerous, because these are appetites that you and I as human beings have that are never really satisfied. In fact, they're dangerous because the more you have, the more you want. How many of you remember when Old Country Buffet was in town? I'm embarrassed to tell you that I remember sitting at Old Country Buffet and finishing my sixth plate of everything. And after my third milkshake, saying to myself something like this: I am sick. I am done eating for 3 days. I can't even imagine. Just the thought of eating again makes me sick. I'm not eating again for 3 days. And I'm embarrassed to tell you that 3.5 hours later, I'm scrounging through the refrigerator looking for leftovers, thinking I really could go for something. And what we learn is that even with our human appetite for food, somehow it exists that the more we have, the more we want, that we're never quite actually satisfied with what we've had. Probably, like me, you've never looked at one of your bank statements and thought to yourself, that is a solid number, I really like that. And you've nudged your spouse and said, did you see this number in our bank account? I think we can retire. And the reason we can retire is because it looks like we have enough money already. We are completely financially satisfied. Wow, I'm glad that's over. You may have heard of this celebrity businessman in the past named, his last name is Rockefeller, right? And there's this, evidently someone asked him one time, so you're a wealthy man and you have at your fingertips all the wealth you could possibly have, right? I mean, how much wealth could you possibly want? And he has this famous line that he replied this way. He said, well, to be honest, all I need is one more dollar, and I'll be satisfied. Just one more. And every day, that drove him, this appetite for one more dollar. And the truth is that so many of us, in so many different ways, we've discovered this. The more you have, the more you want. I've decided that it's true. It's also true for rest, comfort, leisure, luxury, sexual appetite, the appetite for respect, the appetite for significance. We never really fill up those cravings, and we never quit needing what we crave. I mean, sometimes this makes me nervous when my sons are on a video game and I realize that if we didn't cut them short, they would die of malnourishment playing the video game. They would die of dehydration. Sometimes we have to say, hey, take a break and go to the bathroom because they're playing the game like this. What's the matter? You have to go to the bathroom. No, I don't have to go to the bathroom. Yes, you do. Turn the game off and go to the bathroom. Dad, can I just wear a diaper? Can I just slip on? And I get concerned that the appetite for video entertainment will control their life, and eventually that appetite will ruin them because they can't manage to budget their time and they can't manage to... Now listen, these are child appetites, but you know what I've discovered? That our adult appetites aren't video games, hopefully. Our adult appetites are far more treacherous because they have the power to rule our lives and to ruin our lives. You should have some blanks in your notes. Humans are perpetually unsatisfied. They're always longing for more. And our adult appetites have the power to rule and to ruin our lives. You can see this if you watch any one of the assortment of documentaries. There's documentaries on obesity, and not the medical crisis kind of obesity, but the kind that's related to an insatiable appetite bankruptcy. Think of this. Think of documentaries on addiction, white-collar crime, sexually transmitted infections, fatherless children, abortion, and on and on and on. And if you were to walk that back to the source, they are driven by unhealthy appetites that are unrestrained, that have ruined someone's life because they rule their life. Their appetites rule the life so much so that they end up ruining someone's life. It's documented on film. And when you consider the variety of human dissatisfaction that has led to ruin, our dissatisfaction, our longing and hungering, and our appetites that are unsatisfied can lead to disaster. I mean, think of it. When you think of a daughter who is dissatisfied with the attention and the affection of her father, who goes on to spend much of her young life giving herself to boy after boy and then eventually man after man because she has a dissatisfied appetite for attention and affection from her dad. Think about with me those people who are getting married, and here are these two beautiful couples, two beautiful people getting married, and they're going to link their lives together. And if you were to ask them why they're doing it, they might say something like this: I have found my soulmate. I have completely fulfilled and completed by her or by him. Only 10 years later to be drawn away from the marriage into an adulterous affair. Why? Because of the depth of the dissatisfaction that one of them has in their marriage. And their appetite for satisfaction, no matter what kind, whether it's romantic, whether it's sexual, or whether it's emotional or whatever, for intimacy, that dissatisfaction drags them into unthinkable pain and suffering. Why is that? Because we are knit. We are created with longings and an appetite, but they have the power in our lives to rule over us and to eventually ruin us. And we seem to have this unique desire wired in us. And in fact, let me put it this way. How many of you have ever, I wonder if any of you have ever sat with a child and after a day of fun and adventure, say at a theme park, or they've gone for a week to camp and they come home, and I've whispered to my children every now and then, I'm so glad you're home. Are you? And they say, yeah. And I say, do you miss the fun? Are you miserable now because you had to leave? And they say, no. And I say to them, well, didn't you have fun? And they say, yeah, but I just glad to be home. Have you ever come back from a vacation or you've had the time of your life and you just thought to yourself, that was terrific, that was so fantastic, I love being there and we had the time of our lives, but I'm so glad to be home. Now listen, if you're a believer who belongs to God, what if it's possible that no matter how much we enjoy our lives, no matter how fulfilling the things are on earth that we experience, what if God has created us to never be satisfied here on earth because truly he has it in us a longing to be home with God and our King, our groom forever, finally and fully satisfied in heaven. And until then, you and I are going to feel a sense of emptiness, a sense of longing, a sense of appetite that we ultimately are going to find is satisfied once and for all at home. And here's number two. Our adult appetites are intended to be fully and finally, and this is why, fully and finally satisfied by heaven alone. What if it's possible that you and I have been created with a longing to be with our Father in heaven, and every moment that we're away from home, we have a hard time fully enjoying and being fully satisfied? And the reason is because we were created to be with God, to be fully and finally satisfied by heaven alone. And God has prepared a future paradise. The Christian faith, if you're new to the Christian faith, you may know portions or parts of this idea, but the Christian faith, one of the great hopes of the Christian faith is that this earth is not all there is. One of the great hopes of the Christian faith is that ultimately there is a second coming where the groom returns for the bride, and then we spend eternity together, the father with his children and the bride with the groom. And it's described by an author in the Bible named John, who was given a revelation by an angel, and the angel says, hey, write this down really quick, because I want to explain to you in vivid detail what the believers who belong to God can expect in the future. This is how it's going to look in the end. Let me read you a portion of that. Listen to this. Imagine this, if you could, with me. Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth. For the old heaven and the old earth had disappeared, and the sea was also gone. And I saw the holy city, the new Jerusalem, coming down from God out of heaven like a bride beautifully dressed for her husband. Now check this out. I heard a loud shout from the throne saying, look, God's home is now among his people. He will live with them, and he will be with his people. God himself will be with them. He will wipe every tear from their eyes, and there will be no more death, no more sorrow, no more crying, no more pain. All these things are gone forever. Everything sad has come untrue. How exciting is that? What if, listen, what if that is specifically what you and I are waiting for? What if that's what you and I are longing for? What if that's what you and I have found ourselves dissatisfied and unfulfilled because we have been created to live finally and forever with our Creator in heaven forever? My view of heaven, I think, needs an upgrade, because I wish I could tell you different. I'm embarrassed to tell you that when I initially think of heaven, when someone says, what is heaven? I can't help but think of half-naked babies with angel wings on clouds playing little instruments, floating around. And I think, why is that image stuck in my mind? This is a different image. There's a new city, a new Jerusalem, and it settles down with a new king who rules on the throne, Jesus. And he indeed is the groom who takes the bride, and he spreads out an eternal banquet of celebration, joy, and worship. No more suffering. No more hurt. No more emptiness. No, I'm even just sick and tired of cancer and disease and war and abortion and death and suffering. Sick and tired of it. How much must that hurt the heart of the Father who created us for this kind of joy, to see the suffering of his own people? Yet God has created us with an appetite, which is the revelation that indeed we long for something that we don't quite enjoy quite yet. The one sitting on the throne in verse 5, chapter 21 says, and the one sitting on the throne, Jesus said, look, I am making everything new. And he also said, it is finished. I am the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. To all who are thirsty, I will give freely from the springs of the water of life. All who are victorious will inherit all these blessings, and I will be their God, and they will be my people. It'll be complete. It's finished. The beginning and the end, sitting with those whom he created to worship and adore him. Revelation 22, verse 3, this is what it says. Check this out. No longer will there be a curse upon anything, for the throne of God and of the Lamb will be there, and his servants will worship him, and they will see his face, and his name will be written on their foreheads, and there will be no more night there, no need for lamps or sun, for the Lord God will shine on them, and they will reign forever and ever. And the angel says to John, you can write this down, because people are going to say, wait, is that true? And tell him everything you've heard is true. This is how it ends. In the Christian faith, we have a vivid picture of what it looks like when it ends. But I think it's true, and I think we can say for most of us, that longing remains. The appetite for something that isn't quite completed yet remains. God has knit an awe into our soul that longs for our heavenly home. We have this human longing that desires to see God face to face, where our hunger will be fully satisfied. This world provides for us, this is what God does, in his grace, this world provides for us ways in which God stimulates the hunger that we have for the next world where we'll actually be with God face to face. And I want to caution you, never settle for the samples that God has provided to help us get a taste for what heaven is like. Never settle for that. Our hearts are kind of like, there's some unrest, much like our children feel when they get in our minivan or we're taking a trip and they start to say, are we there yet? How much longer? Are we there yet? How much longer? Are we there yet? How much longer? I'm like, honey, would you leave me alone? I'm trying to drive and you're the whole time annoying me. Even the kids don't say that. There's this longing in our hearts. Are we there yet? Are we home yet? Are we there yet? And there's this this gnawing that is occurring in most in our souls. You know what I've discovered? When you desire something and you don't have it, it makes you miserable. It makes you miserable. My teenage children and I just discussed this recently, that for some reason we're the most miserable just after Sunday morning services. And it's not because we spend any time with you. It's the opposite. You hold us off until finally everyone leaves, and about 1 or 1:15 in the afternoon, we find ourselves so irritable and miserable. And we discovered it's because we've gone so long without food that we're no longer hungry, we have become hangry. When you're so hungry that it makes you angry and you get hangry, right? You're so, you have this, what you long for, you don't have, and it begins to make you irritable and miserable. What if it's possible that you and I spend a lot of time from day to day to day hangry about the desires that we have to be with God and know God and ultimately be satisfied, but we're frustrated and we're just not there yet? What if that's possible? So the next time your spouse is criticizing you, say, look, leave me alone. I'm just hangry for heaven, okay? Just leave me alone. But this is what we discover, that if you are not careful, you become miserable. And let me offer you this one idea. You can write this down in your notes. You must recognize the appetites that are ruling you before they ruin you. You have to recognize that there are things that are at work. Your appetite is at work. And you have to recognize the appetites that are ruling you before they ruin you. Any appetite that rules you, keep this in mind, you have to be very careful, because any appetite that rules you has the power to eventually ruin you. Anything that you desire, a family, a home, a spouse, gratification, comfort, significance, wealth, respect, all of those things that we put in the center of our lives and our whole life is driven by the appetite for more and more of it, has the power to ruin our lives. It's called sin, where we substitute something that satisfies us instead of that thing being God who created us with something else that he created. Do you know the appetites that are ruling you? Are you familiar with? Have you been able to identify? Could you write down a small list of the things that drive you and that sometimes puts you in a position to be hangry because you just don't have what you're hungry for? I don't think there's any of us who haven't come across somebody who's ruled by their need for something, comfort, by their need for more attention, by their hunger and appetite for more love from a parent or a child, or more attention or respect from a coworker or a boss, or more affection and romance from someone they love. Someone who's driven by the appetite for more escape from stress and hurt, eventually leading them to an addiction to pills or some kind of painful addictive drug, substance. Or someone who's driven by the appetite for more money in their bank or more sexual gratification. Eventually, until we're home in heaven, every moment of present awe is not supposed to be a source of addiction. Rather, it's a source of awe of the astonishment that is to come. I have come to really love hors d'oeuvres at a wedding reception. I thank God for hors d'oeuvres. When I'm at a wedding reception, I look at the clock and I think to myself, okay, it's 6 o'clock. This reception goes till 10 o'clock, which means it might be a couple hours before. Oh my goodness, there's the bacon-wrapped scallops. And I've seen some of you at these wedding receptions, and don't think for a second I don't notice that you have purposefully positioned yourself near the door in where the servers come out of the back kitchen with this plate full of hors d'oeuvres. I know you, I see you there, and I see you there because I'm usually there as well with you. But I am so grateful that these fantastic hors d'oeuvres are not the banquet. They're just a sample. They're just a trial run. They're just a taste of what's to come. I am so thankful that what God has provided for us, like the joy of a wedding. I love being at a wedding. My daughter's saying to me, Dad, do you do any weddings this summer? Because we want to come. They love weddings. They don't ask about funerals, but they love to be at weddings. There is something about watching two people commit their lives together in a sacred marriage that brings joy. There's something about, and whether you're a grandpa or a grandma, or whether you're a new parent or a new uncle or a new aunt, there's something that happens in our hearts when we're holding a newborn baby and we get a whiff of that brand new life. There is something about taking in a deep breath on vacation on the seaside, and we take in that sea breeze, or we watch that sunrise, and it's so gratifying. Listen, here's what's happening. God has given us a little hors d'oeuvre or a sample to say, here's just a taste of the banquet to come that I will have prepared for you when you finally and fully satisfied in heaven, when you're with me and you're with me face to face. And all those things up until then are just a taste of what's to come. And what God has done is he has provided for us a longing for awe, and he satisfies that incompletely until finally and fully we're satisfied forever. A foretaste of glory divine. Every sample, a foretaste of glory divine before we enjoy the glorious banquet that God has prepared for us. But since our appetites are never fully satisfied, feasting on samples can ruin our life. So we have to be careful. And this is what I wanted to warn you about. Reject, recognize what those appetites are and be careful to reject them or renounce them as the reason for which you live. Taking from you the most valuable resources or causing you to indulge in those things in such a way that they rule over you. Here's how Jesus puts it. Here at the end of this chapter in verse 17 and 20, you'll see this in your notes. Our appetites should lead us to Jesus. He is the one who has provided that. He is the only one who quenches the thirst or satisfies hunger. Here's how he puts it in Revelation. The Spirit and the Bride say, come, let anyone who hears this come. So if you are intrigued by or you have an appetite for heaven, let anyone who hears this say, come. Let anyone who is thirsty do what? Come. Let anyone who desires drink freely come from the water of life. He who is the faithful witness to all these things says, yes, I am coming soon. Amen. Come, Lord Jesus. You know what it reminds me of? Jesus is, I imagine he was sitting down. I don't imagine Jesus was standing with the woman at the well. I don't imagine that it was very comfortable to stand there and have this conversation. I imagine that somehow that Jesus was low and he was sitting with a Samaritan woman. And he goes on to identify that this Samaritan woman had been recently married over and over and over. And he even says, I even know that the man you're with now isn't even your husband. I know that you're longing for someone to love you. I know that you're longing for fulfillment. I know that you're longing to be cherished and treasured. And I want to tell you something. If you were to allow yourself to be loved by me, then you, that thirst that you have, will be quenched. Because I am the drink. I am the bread of life. I am the living water. And when you start to enjoy me, you're fully satisfied. You're completely satisfied. And you don't have to go chase your appetite around for another man to love you and complete you and cherish you, because the kind of love I've provided, I've demonstrated on a cross. It is selfless. It is beautiful. It is for your benefit. It's not a taking love. It's a giving love. It's a gracious love. It doesn't force you to be someone or to earn it. And Jesus is explaining to the Samaritan woman at the well that you don't have to continue looking for what you desire. Your appetite will only be satisfied when you believe and receive that I am the one who God has sent. And you'll never be thirsty again. And if you knew that, you would be satisfied. You'll never be hungry again. And if you knew that, you'll never be satisfied. Jesus said, I'm the bread of life. Whoever comes to me will never hunger again. Whoever believes in me will never be thirsty again. Here's why. Because Jesus is the satisfaction that our soul desires. Jesus is the satisfaction that our heart desires. And I wonder this morning if some of you haven't just struggling through life that is so riddled with complications and hurt because your appetites have ruled over you and have begun to ruin your life. And I wonder if there's others who have tried to fill up on church or started to fill up on religion, and you tried to fill your life with adding Christian activity to your life, but what you have failed to do is you failed to find your greatest joy and your greatest satisfaction in Jesus alone. And you can surrender those appetites. Let's pray together. Father.